WFM with Green Fern, a nourishing addition to any sandwich, salad, stir fry, or snack. Natural protein your way.
Thanks to Jenny Green for getting us to the end of the week. It's Friday, the 22nd of January, and this is Game On.
Coming up today, Alan Colley and Stephen Elliott are with us to discuss Liverpool's goal drought as Jurgen Klopp prepares for Old Trafford on Sunday.
Oh, we lost the game, which I think is pretty... It's actually impossible to lose, but we did it. And that's my fault. So because my job is to make sure that the boys... They make the right decisions, all these kind of things, and that obviously didn't work out.
Jeff Shepherd will cast his eye over the conference finals in the NFL as this weekend we find out who will be competing for Super Bowl 55 in Florida.
Brady! It's
it! Oh, there is a play. Tinney rolling out, throws it! Hill! And the Chiefs are heading to the NFC Championship game.
There's no way! He shocked everybody! That is impossible! I've never seen it!
Plus, we've team news ahead of Munster versus Leinster, racing with Jane Mangan, and the rest of the day's news.
Game on 2FM.
If you want to get in touch, you can text us on 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM. Donoghue, it doesn't feel right to be starting Friday off lamenting Liverpool's loss last night, so let's get into the team news with Rumpy instead, because now we've got to look forward to something.
I thought, when I saw it last night, it was like, oh no, this isn't going to go down well with Marie.
It didn't go down well, Donoghue, at all.
But you know what? Marie, I grew up in the 80s supporting Liverpool. You know, it's been a long while. It's good to give new fans an appreciation of what we went through for years.
I was laughing. My kids have no idea what it's like, because sure, they've just been aware of Champions League finals, yeah, going to Club World Cup finals in Qatar, winning leagues. They've no idea.
This is the proper supporting. No, exactly. Throw your jersey on today. Yeah,
the reality of it. But look, we do have a very exciting weekend of rugby ahead. Teams were named today. And look, I think it's really good, you know, to be here actually having debate about two fully loaded teams heading into an Interpros that actually means something.
You've nailed it. Fully loaded. These teams are fully loaded. If you look at Munster teams, Mike Haley, Keith Earls and Shane Daly are the back three, with Chris Farrell and Damien Deadland in the centre, JJ Hanrahan and Conor Murray and in the halfbacks. Then a front row, James Cronin, Reese Marshall and John Ryan, the engine room of John Klein and Ty Byrne, and then a back row of Gavin Coombs, Peter O'Mahony, who will captain the team as always, and CJ Sandler. And then a Leinster team of Hugo Keane and Jordan Larmour and Jimmy O'Brien. I like that back three, completely interchangeable. I don't think there'll be a whole lot of grass left free for Munster to exploit. The brilliant news for Irish rugby, forget about your red or blue goggles today when you hear Gary Ringrose is back. That is brilliant news for Irish rugby. He'll partner Robbie Henshaw, then Irish captain Johnny Sexton with Luke McGrath, Keane Healy, Sean Cronin, Andrew Porter, Scott Fardy and James Ryan, and then a back row of Reese Ruddock, Will Connors and Caelan Doris. I think, like you said, Marie, these teams are loaded. The back row itself, like, we're, you know, you're chatting UFC, this is blockbuster stuff this weekend. That back row in itself is worth watching. Leinster have gone for a 6-2 bench, six forwards, two backs. I wonder, is that because of the cold weather? You don't want to be crouching in beside any of those backs at that point. But I think it's an indication of where they want to go. Young Tom Clarkson's on the bench there. It'll be interesting to see how he goes. And a bit of dog on their bench really is. Ross Maloney, Jack Conan, really exciting. So, yeah, as you said, Dave Kilcoyne to come off for Munster, and Ben Healy and Noel Scanlon to get a run. So I'm excited about it. I think it's great. The big news is Gary Ringrose being back. I think that is such a great news, especially coming into Six Nations.
Yeah, for sure. Look, let's just talk about the match for a little while, because it's intriguing. This weekend is intriguing, and I think it's quite interesting to see how Munster are going to approach it. Like, what do you think they're going to do?
Yeah, well, I was curious before I saw the team. I was wondering where they are in their conference. Could they afford to give someone like Ben Healy a start? Because they're so clear in their conference, they could use it. But it's absolute maximum respect. This is a big, big game, and they're putting out all their big names. When you look at it as well, even having someone like Dave Kilcoyne on the bench, could you have used it as an opportunity to bring someone like Josh Witcherly? No, you're playing the best team in Europe. You know, the standards, well, sorry, Saracens won last year, but Leinster have been the benchmark for so long. So I think it's a fully respected Munster team. And I think, it's exciting to see it. I thought there might be an opportunity to give guys a go, but I'm actually fully respectful that it's going to be a big, big match. And Peter Stringer gave us kind of a bit of insight last night about, one player he mentioned was Kevin O'Byrne and how impressive he was. And there's no place for him in the Munster squad, which you can chat about squad depth, but this is reality of it. And someone like in Niall Scannell coming back in, who's an international, this is proper competition for places. What I hope, Marie, is what doesn't happen is that we get an over-emotional game, if you know what I'm saying. I want to see, of course, how much it means to both provinces. You want to see that. But I hope it doesn't distract from it. You know what I mean? We need this to be a quality game of rugby, and I think that's more important than, two tribes hopping the heads off each other. Of course, we want to see how much they care, but they can, channel it. No, I'm the last fella that should be saying that.
Yeah, I was going to say, I presume it's easier said than done. Like, you've been there, done that. Like, can you control that emotion?
Yeah,
crowd?
No crowd, yeah, definitely. I think you can. It's about execution now. I think, this is about just calm heads. And I think, I think it was 2 years ago we saw one with a young Finneen, which really picking up Johnny Sexton. But Leinster lost that day, but they were over the top on emotion. And I would hate for either province to be that, because it actually ruins the game. And I know I'm saying that as a former fella that would probably be going out with,
guilty.
Yeah, exactly. But I think we need a big game and big opportunities. You asked last night about the likes of Paul O'Connell keeping an eye, and there is brilliant opportunities for certain players. The big two I'd keep an eye out for are the likes of James Cronin and Sean Cronin. I know it may be in past regimes they would have been seen like they're being passed out, but I think they've been putting in big performances, and I think a big game out of both those guys could look to put them back in the fold for Green, which I think everyone is looking at green shoots as opposed to guys that are really good. I must say, I was waiting for the teams to be named, and I was delighted to see both of them. It's impressive, impressive teams, and I hope it lives up to it.
It feels like there's a lot of excitement around this Munster team, excitement that maybe hasn't been there for a while. And if you were just to match up the teams, how do you think they're going to match up those starting teams?
Yeah, I think you're right, Marie, but I'm nervous a little bit about it, because Munster have played well, but Leinster have set the benchmark. If you look back, and like we were chatting to Jamie and Peter last night, everyone looks back at that semi-final, and Munster's execution that night wasn't good enough. What was frustrating as a Munster supporter was 3 weeks later seeing Saracen go out with the exact same game plan, implement it better, bring better physicality. But reading reports today from Damien Delande, and him chatting about Stephen Larkham, it's going back to probably an impression of leaving players make the right decisions at the right time. And I think what probably happened maybe in Munster, my understanding, my feeling for it was everyone is looking to be told what to do, whereas there's sometimes you need to tell quality players, go up, get your head up, have a look around and do the right thing at the right time. And I know that seems really simple to do, but you actually have to coach that. You have to, stress the players and put them into those situations so they're, they're able to execute under pressure. But I'm excited about this game. I think it is brilliant. It's brilliant that it's going ahead purely because we've the Six Nations around the corner. But I think, Leinster, to be fair to them, they shot down Ulster, who came down to the RDS sticking out their chest about how well they're going. I think this is a big game as well for Leinster. Everyone's chanting about Munster, being thereabouts again. Well, this is a chance for Leinster to give them a bloody nose.
It's also been billed now as a trial game, which adds a different element to it. Were you ever involved in anything like this before?
100%. Sorry, every time you went out in inter-pro matches, it's a trial. This is an awful thing to say, but I remember in 2006, Raj scored a brilliant try, but he actually went past Malcolm O'Kelly to score. Remember, he jumped the fence and ended up hugging someone, Patrick Horgan, a buddy of mine, in the crowd. But I remember just being delighted. Rog could have fallen over on his arse 2 seconds after sidestepping Malcolm O'Kelly. All I was seeing was my opposition for a green jersey having a big error that would affect the game. I know that's an awful thing to say, but that's the mindset when you're in it. You're just looking, how can I get back in a green shirt, and how can I look after it? So yeah, everyone's coming fully blooded in terms of their Irish aspirations, but like we said last night, there's also contracts on the line, so I think there is added pressure around the place, which is good. And look, I think unfortunately the Pro 14 probably hasn't hit the straps, and we need a game like this, so yeah, I'm excited about it.
And Jamie, he made the point last night as well, that it won't be lost on the players how much people are looking forward to this game and how much they need a distraction from reality as well, and that, you know, going out there, putting on a performance, entertaining people as well. People are really looking forward to this.
100, you're dead right. Honestly, they really are. And I think even when players chat to their families, or people chat to, you know, their friends or their buddies when they're on WhatsApp groups, you know, this is kind of lifting you a little bit. And look, I don't want to take away from the emotional buy-in that you need to have for big games. You definitely need it. And if you look at for Munster, there is landmark caps tomorrow night. CJ Sander will go for his 150th, Jack O'Donoghue's on his 100th, and Mike Haley on his 50th. And Marie, if you respect and care for those guys, you want to give them a proper performance. You want them to be able to look back on their 150th cap and say, yeah, that was a special day. So I'd agree with Jamie. I think people know, that all rugbyites will be on this last week. Last weekend was a disaster. There was no game, but this is probably the biggest one, so we're excited for it. I really hope it doesn't fall flat. You know, like, it just, I'm not looking for corner to corner, you know what I mean? I'm looking for proper European standard rugby, to be fair.
When you're talking about kind of being emotionally bogged down by the occasion or a game falling flat, a Munster-Leinster game, what one comes to mind for you that you played in?
I'll be honest, I always played poorly in Munster game. And I remember it was Alan Gaffney made the point to me, he was there, way too much emotion out of you, and that's where you always underperform in these games. I just need you to go out and just play another game. But I suppose the one that stands out is 09. You know, we lost in Croke Park, and look, I'll be honest, like Leinster, to be fair, have pushed on from that point, and this game won't right the wrongs of any of those games. It needs to be of equal measure. It needs to be a big game as well. But when it comes to rivalries, you always want to be thereabouts. And I think the end of last season was disappointed, not only with the result but the performance, Marie. I can always live with a Munster team that go out and empty themselves. I happily clap them off the pitch and be delighted with them, and that's all you ever want to see. So yeah, I hope it's a big one, but from an Irish point of view, it is good that we have the two of them going at it.
So on a freezing cold Saturday night, who will be victorious?
Oh, I can never. I'm a disaster to ask this, because I'm always hurt. You know what I mean? I can't go against Munster, which is disappointing. But look, Leinster are the standard setters. And look, I think even result aside this weekend, that won't sway that an awful lot. It's when you start picking up silverware that it matters. But look, I'm hopeful for a Munster win, but that's probably my call.
Yeah, well, I think we're all hopeful for a good game of rugby, but we'll find out soon enough. We're going to take a quick break now, and then we're back with football.
Game on 2FM with Green Firm. Green Firm's new on-the-go chicken bites are natural, high in protein, and packed with flavour.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back. Well, there will be lots of football on tonight and over the weekend to keep us entertained, and I'm delighted to say that we are joined by Alan Cawley and Stephen Elliott to go through it all. But before we get into the action, Stephen, I'm going to go to you first, just about Mick McCarthy, because he looks set to make a return to management with Cardiff City, and I have to say, he's some man to get a job, Stephen.
Yeah, I seen that in the news today, and I have to say, Marie, I wasn't overly surprised when he was sacked from from his job out in Cyprus. I actually was speaking to somebody and I said I wouldn't be surprised if one of the championship jobs or even kind of bigger League One jobs comes up, Mick will probably be straight in for it. And I think after Cardiff getting rid of Neil Harris, they're probably looking for somebody that has a little bit of experience in the league and kind of shore things up a little bit. I think they've lost the last five or six games in the league and they've got a decent squad there, championship level Cardiff. I think they would probably be hoping to be in and around the playoff positions at kind of at least. So I don't know. I think it'd be a good appointment for them. They know what they're going to get. And listen, if it does happen, good luck to them.
Yeah, absolutely. Alan, just there was a lot of talk as well, I suppose, about Jack Byrne and him moving over to Apoel and then obviously Mick leaving and what that means for him. He hasn't played a huge amount yet and a lot of that is down to him getting fit. But look, when somebody wants him and they have a new big job, it's probably a positive thing.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see just how much faith, I suppose, Mick has in Jack, because it was all right taking him to Cyprus over to Apoel Nicosia, where the standard would be obviously a lot less than Premier League or Championship level, but would he take him obviously to a Cardiff City now, and that if he does get appointed there, I'm not so sure, Marie, and it'll be interesting to see. But I was surprised, to be honest, which I think Mick's best days are behind him. But like Stephen said, he knows the league inside out. He knows that scene. That's predominantly where he's managed, I suppose, in the last number of years. I just think after the Irish job and then obviously him going to Cyprus, you wouldn't really judge him on the Cyprus thing, because they've been notorious in sacking managers and he was only there a couple of months. But certainly I felt the last campaign with Ireland, I thought it was dire. And I think his best days are behind him, to be honest.
Yeah, well, it's going to be a really, really big challenge and it'll be interesting to see how he gets on. Look, I did mention there is a lot of football action on over the next few days, but I think we probably do need to start with last night and the shock Liverpool defeat at the hands of Burnley. Well, Stephen, I thought it was a shock. I don't know if everybody else did. What were your thoughts on it?
Listen, Liverpool are home to Burnley champions. You would expect them to beat Burnley, but Burnley don't make it easy for anybody. Sean Dyche sets his teams up very disciplined and no team gets an easy ride against him. And it was the same last night. And the longer the game went on, he just felt that it wasn't going to be Liverpool's night. And lo and behold, Burnley get their penalty. And to be fair to Barnes, who was a bit of a handful all night, he stuck her away very competently. But now Liverpool are going through a really rough spell now at the minute. And you're looking at the fixtures coming up and you're just thinking, where is the catalyst for the turnaround? And you'd be a brave man to kind of pick any of the next three games anyway for that to be the turning point.
Yeah, well, things seem to be getting a bit tough for Jurgen Klopp as well. Let's hear what he had to say after last night's game.
Of course we go again. There's no doubt about that. But it was yesterday directly after the game. And I said what I thought, like most of the time, actually. And I said it, when the things don't work out on the pitch as we want them to work out, then there's an issue. So, and in how I understand it, the issue is then the things I tell the boys, I didn't tell them clear enough. So that's how I understand it. So I have to change the way I tell the boys, and then we have to change the way we play.
Okay, that was him today from today's press conference. Alan, he's taking the blame there, in fairness to him, but like he's mentioning those issues and they do seem fairly clear, and one of them is that they're not scoring goals.
Yeah, it's a big issue and it's becoming a big problem, Marie. But to be fair, Klopp is obviously defending the players there and he's taking full responsibility, and that's fine. It might be a different story behind closed doors. But I think, to be fair to Liverpool, they are going through a very sticky patch. But it's hard to criticise these players, Marie, when you think they've been on the go for a good two and a half seasons now, and relentless, really, when I say on the go. They haven't stopped. And you can't overemphasise the fact that they've lost Van Dijk and Gomez. You look around at any other team in the league, in any other country, if you lose two of your best centre-halves, your two best centre-halves, of course you're going to struggle. I would also throw in Jota into that, because I think when Jota came in, he hit the ground running. He was a brilliant addition to the squad, just to spice things up with that front three. Because to be fair to the front three as well, they've been so reliant on them, they've been so good, they've been so consistent, they've been playing every match, every week. Firmino never really scored a lot of goals. The other two obviously did, Mane and Salah. But you can't keep it going, Marie. There comes a point where, especially with Klopp, with the demands that he puts on them and the intensity that they play at, there's going to come a time where you're going to just say, we just can't do this any longer. And the problem that he's had with Jota getting injured, and obviously with the other two injured, it's hard to change up the squad. Even the FA Cup game there against Villa, the U team a couple of weeks ago, he played a full team. He's finding it hard just to rest players and rest people. And now you're going through the slump. We even saw it last night where he tried to change it up with Origi and Oxlade-Chamberlain, but after an hour straight away he was thinking, I need to get Firmino and Salah on the pitch straight away. They are struggling, they're going through a slump. I wouldn't be writing them off just yet. I think they'll turn it around, and you can't overemphasise just how important those injuries are. And even we see it today with Man City, De Bruyne getting injured and he's going to be out for 4 to 6 weeks. You'll see an impact on that team as well, because he's their best player. Also Vardy with Leicester. It's been great for United. They've had no injuries so far, and there's a bit of luck involved in that. But I think with Liverpool, there's a lot of factors involved, and I wouldn't be too harsh or critical, or I certainly wouldn't be writing them off at all.
Stephen, I always hated as a player when a manager took the blame. It always meant you were in big trouble for trailing. Did you find it the same case? But for him, he's saying it's a confidence issue, and it's a really hard thing to work on.
Yeah, I think like Alan mentioned there, he come out, what he says in front of the press may be a little bit different to what he's saying with his players. But you're just looking at Liverpool. I know Alan mentioned the front three there. They don't look like they have the energy about them what they did have. Like I remember when they were pressing from the front, when they were winning games quite comfortably, and that was the catalyst. They had Jordan Henderson behind them urging them on, and that's another thing we need to point out. He's been missing from the midfield in a few of those games as well, obviously playing at the back and picking up his groin strain last night, and I think he's a catalyst to get them three walking. But like Anne said, Jota was a big miss, because I think what he did when he came in, he got the other three walking again. They were not resting on the laurels a little bit, but they might have been a little bit comfortable there, knowing that they were going to play every week. There wasn't anybody really pushing them. And when Jota got injured, I think they may have fallen back into that comfort zone a little bit. And it's just, you're watching Liverpool, and it's hard to believe that five, 6 games ago, they scored like 7 goals, and you're thinking, oh, they're back to where they are. And well, they've scored 1 goal in 5 league games since then. And I don't know, it's very hard to pick yourself up, no matter who you are, whether you're playing for Liverpool Premier League champions or a team in the Tour Division. You got confidence is everything, and if you haven't got that, it's very hard just to turn that switch on. And I know Alan says he wouldn't write Liverpool off yet, which you can never write a squad off that has quality like Liverpool do have in them. But you're looking at the next fixtures, even in the league there, you got Spurs away next Thursday, followed by West Ham on the weekend, who are flying as well. Throw Leicester and Leicester City and Man City into the mix a couple of weeks later. You're looking at really hard fixtures. So I think Liverpool are already at a stage where you're thinking they can't really afford to drop many more points. So it's a big ask for Liverpool to kind of, I think, retain the title now, just because they're going to have to win every game. And can they do that at the moment? Looking at them, I don't think they can.
And Alan, what's really worrying as well is that, look, OK, we saw the emotion last night with Sean Dyche in the tunnel, and, you know, it's not really like Klopp. But then today you add in the quotes from the press conference when he's saying that somebody else is making the decisions, that they talk about it every day, they know they need to improve something, but he cannot spend the money. And when things like that are being said, like we've seen it in the past, when managers are saying things like that, it usually means it's not all rosy.
No, and he's getting tetchy, Marie. I didn't like his reaction last night with Dyche. You see him chasing him down the tunnel, and we don't know what Dyche said as he passed him by. But Klopp then reacted, like, really badly, I felt, and he's running down the tunnel, and they're having a shout match and all. And even you look at him on the line, and this has gone back to a few weeks ago. I remember the interview with Des Kelly, and he's been a lot more tetchy than what we've seen him in the past. And as you said, normally you see him on the line, he's high-fiving everyone and hugging and kissing, and he has the media in the palm of his hand. But certainly the last few weeks, that hasn't been the case. And that's pressure as well, Marie, because obviously the results haven't been there, and it looks like his team is not performing the way he wants them and the way we've been used to seeing them. So of course the pressure, but I think he needs to control himself a little bit as well, because I think that could be affecting the team also, because there's almost a sense of desperation off him on the line, and I don't think that's good. Whereas you look at even the likes of Brendan Rodgers on the line, everything's calm, composed, under control. And I love a bit of passion, don't get me wrong, you want to see that, but I just think he's been a bit tetchy, more so than we've ever seen him in the last number of years, and that's purely down to pressure.
Stephen, from a player's point of view, to lose a record like that, 68 games undefeated at home, it's a bit scarring, isn't it?
Yeah, you can look at it that way. It was an unbelievable record, Donica. To go that many games without losing at home was huge. And you could probably throw in the fact that there's no supporters there now. That probably hasn't helped Liverpool. I know it's the same for every club, but I think at Anfield, away game, when you go to Anfield as an away team, it's very difficult. There's a real kind of atmosphere there and the noise there, and it is a kind of, I don't know, what's, you walk out into the stand and you just feel like you're up against not only the team but a really big passionate crowd, and that's something that would have helped Liverpool over that record. And for them to lose that this year towards the end of last year, it was coming, this defeat. Donaghy, you're watching even games they played recently at home where they've kind of been scraped. Even the West Brom game, they struggled to score goals, so you just felt it was only a matter of time. The Man United probably could have and probably should have kind of took the record off them last weekend, but it was coming, and I think it's one of them now. They just have to kind of forget about that record and start again. But it is, like I said, it's going to be really tough for Liverpool to lift themselves, because if you look at the last two seasons, they've been perfect, more or less. Like the points accumulation they've had in both last seasons and the seasons before. I know they fell a little bit short just the season before, just behind City, but from a point situation, they were just picking up points for fun. And now this is the first time now in 3 years where Liverpool are probably thinking, you know what, we're not having things our own way. They picked up 3 points out of a possible 15, and it's nowhere near good enough. And I just feel like it's one of them where they need to regroup, they need to freshen things up a little bit, and maybe add some new signings, maybe a little bit more youthful energy into the attacking lineup as well, because them lads aren't getting any younger. I know that they're still probably in the prime, some of them, but you do need that. You need to keep kind of building on the squad you have, and I think that's something that Klopp will need to look at over the next kind of, see, this transfer window and in the summer.
Alan, they have to play Manchester United at the weekend, which is no easy feat. And I think, okay, it's the FA Cup, but still, they will not want to lose to them. And when you think about the game last week and the criticism of Manchester United perhaps having missed an opportunity, do you think they're going to approach this game differently?
I think this is going to tell an awful lot, Marie, because I think Klopp has a dilemma now. He knows that he needs to give the players, I feel, a rest, because you look at them the other night, as Stephen said there, their energy levels look as though they're not where they were. They look a bit flat. Their confidence is low. But yet, he's going into a game against Man United, their most bitter rivals, and because of the run that they're on, he knows he can't afford another bad result. So I think it's going to be really, really interesting and really telling the team selection on Sunday and what he does for the game, for those reasons that I've said, because he just can't afford to have another bad result and keep the run going and be in that rut that they're in. If you were to go to Old Trafford and win, I know it's the obviously the FA Cup, but that could turn the whole season around. A good confidence performance and you get the victory, and it could turn everything around. So it'll be really, really interesting, and you'll also get a sense of his priorities, because the league for me is the number one. They want to defend the title that they took so long for them to win. You have the Champions League also coming up that obviously he did want to perform well in, and I know it's a few weeks away. It's only around the corner really, I suppose, where the FA Cup will be third in line. So if you are seeing him going to make changes, it's going to be obviously on Sunday against Man United, but as I said, he just can't afford to have another bad result, so it's going to be really, really interesting to see what he does.
Stephen, if you were Man United, you'd be licking your lips, not only, you know, the fact that it's the FA Cup, but the fact that they're hurting at the moment and you can put a boot in.
Oh, definitely. First and foremost, for Man United, it's a home tie. I know there's no crowd there, but it's huge. Old Trafford. Listen, Man United, Liverpool, it's the biggest fixture in English football, and it's always going to kind of create big headlines. So United will be going into this full of confidence. They're winning games. They've seen to found a bit of form. Paul Pogba, it's no coincidence now, he's kind of found his feet in there again. Looks like he's got the hunger in him again, the bit between his teeth, and he's playing really well. Whether he'll play the weekend, I'm not sure, like, because obviously Man United are probably looking at the league table themselves and thinking, you know what, this could be our year. But no, it's always going to be an interesting game when the two teams play. But Man United, well, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer will feel a lot less pressure on him going into the game than Jurgen Klopp will, that's for sure.
Alan, there are a few big games, and look, it is the FA Cup fourth round, but I think just in terms of teams that need to perform, we will see some interesting lineups, I think, and Chelsea could be one, I think, especially with Lampard under pressure. And look, they're playing Luton Town, but they're not playing well at the moment.
No, and Luton Town have picked up a couple of results in recent weeks as well. They beat Bournemouth last week, so every game is tricky, Marie, especially when you're underperforming and you're under pressure. And we saw Lampard today having a go at one of the journalists. He's definitely feeling the heat. Whatever about Klopp, he has plenty of kind of credibility banked there, and he doesn't have to worry about his job, but certainly Frank Lampard is worrying about his job at the moment. And the longer their bad run goes on, I think it's 5 defeats out of their last 8 matches, they're on a horrendous run. And when you think back again, only a few weeks ago they were riding high and people talking about giving him a new contract. So you can go through peaks and troughs like that, Marie, and we saw that with Man United at the start. We were all critical of them. Look at them now. Will they give Lampard the time? I'd like to think they will. we know with history, with Chelsea's history of sacking managers, that they don't give managers time. But I'd like to think that they would and let him try and turn things around. But certainly the game on Sunday, he'll have to get a win against Luton, and they should get a win against Luton. But he's definitely feeling the heat at the moment, Frank Lampard.
Stephen, looking ahead, you know, we look at the magic of the Cup. Man City are having to travel to Cheltenham Town. Getting togged out in the bar seems impressive enough, but no Kevin De Bruyne or Sergio Aguero.
No. Listen, it's you know, Man City. On paper, it's a tricky enough tie. But you would think even if they kind of pour out a reservish team, they should still have enough to beat Cheltenham. The other players come in. Listen, there's no player probably in the world that is going to replace Kevin De Bruyne, especially the way he's playing. He's world class. But they have other players to come in. Mahrez could come in and do a really good job for City. So I think they just got to manage, obviously, first getting this cup game out of the way the weekend. But they've got to manage now the kind of squad. Pep is going to manage his squad over the next few weeks and try and pick up as many points until he kind of gets Kevin De Bruyne and Sergio Aguero back into the firing line.
And Alan, Leicester will also have to manage their squad because it looks like Jamie Vardy is going to be out for a while. He needs a hernia operation and he'll no doubt be a big, big loss.
Yeah, when I saw the news break today, Marie, the point I was making, even with obviously Liverpool having the injuries, Man City with De Bruyne, that's huge. Your best player, that's going to have an impact. And for Vardy, he's their best player, bar probably Madison, but he's the one that gets all the goals for them, and he's the main man, really, Vardy. So that's going to have an impact. I think, to be fair to Brendan Rodgers, they were trying to manage the situation over the last couple of weeks, and they probably got him in the operation this week, knowing that they had the FA Cup tie, because obviously they're not that bothered about the FA Cup. Brentford is a tricky match as well, because Brentford are going well, obviously, in the Championship, but they might advise you even see Championship teams resting players as well, because their priority is trying to get promoted, Marie. But certainly Vardy will be a big loss. But I was so impressed with Leicester during the week, and nobody's talking about Leicester. Everybody's on about Man United, Liverpool, Man City, but you look at Leicester against Chelsea tonight, and I know Chelsea have been underperforming, but that was one of the most accomplished performances I've seen from a team in a long time. And you're talking about a manager who is in total control of his squad. Every player knows his role, knows his position, the formation that they set up in. I think their midfield three is as good as you'll find around, with Ndidi and Tielemans. Madison's playing out of his skin at the moment. So Leicester are certainly a major dark horse for the title as well. And I wouldn't be surprised. They have the squad as well. That's something that Leicester have built up over the last couple of years. So I'm sure Rodgers will make changes to the game against Brentford.
Okay, well, there is one game that we will be keeping an eye on tonight, and that is Chorley versus Wolves, because we had the Chorley manager Jamie Vermiglio on last night, so we wish him all the best in that. And Alan and Stephen, thanks so much for joining us and sharing your expertise with us. We're going to take a very quick break very, very shortly, but first we're going to hear from Conor McGregor, because he is fighting Dustin Poirier at UFC 257 this weekend.
Out of the available lightweights to you right now, is Dustin the hardest challenge you could be facing?
I think so, yeah. You know, I'll always look to get the highest challenge. Dustin has a win over Hooker, who's on stage here. You know, he has a win, he knocked out Justin. So there's some high contenders already. Justin in turn knocked out Tony, who was another contender. So I think I'm right at the top here. You know, I would make the case, if that man is continuing to dodge this and dodge the commitment of competing again, the title should be stripped and we should be engaging in a title fight. I predict a title strip.
Game on 2FM with Green Farm. Fuel your day the healthy way with Green Farm on-the-go chicken bites. 100% natural and packed with protein.
Game on 2FM.
Packers were in the NFC Championship game last year. Lost a tough one to San Francisco. And I know the kind of team they are and what they're capable of. They got a great offense, one of the best in the league. Really talented defense, really well coached. So it's how it should be, you know. The two best teams in the conference should be getting together and seeing how it all goes down. And I'm excited for it. We still got a lot of preparation. I mean, we barely got started in practice today. But, you know, we're going to need two more good days, and then that will be ready to go.
A lot of good news in the States this week. Joe Biden's in the White House. Sarah Thompson will officiate at the Super Bowl. And to bring us up to speed, we're delighted to be joined by Jeff Shepherd. Shep, how are you?
I'm doing great, guys. And that's South Mississippi native Sarah Thomas that's going to be in the Super Bowl.
Oh, yes. It is a brilliant appointment, isn't it?
Yeah, she's been fantastic. She was actually like a, you know, high school and college basketball star down here in South Mississippi. And so she's been, you know, she's been athletic her entire life. And, you know, a lot of folks down here aren't even really surprised that, you know, she's having such success. They just kind of like, yeah, she's awesome.
We heard from Tom Brady there after the break, so there's going to be a lot of focus on him with Tampa Bay at Green Bay. Do you think that he can win a Super Bowl without Bill Belichick?
Yeah, I mean, Murray, look, he has been, I think, as advertised and has pretty much done everything you would expect, you know, a player of his caliber to do in a new situation. Now, look, they helped him out. They got him Gronk, and they went and got Antonio Brown, who we just found out is not going to be playing this weekend. He's not even going to be traveling to Green Bay. He hurt his knee last week against the Saints. But, you know, they helped. He helped beef up the running game by getting Leonard Fournette, and Bruce Arians is a very good coach who's had a lot of success before. You know, I don't really think anybody is super stunned that this is the matchup. I mean, these are two of the three best teams, and the Bucs beat the other best team in the NFC last week. So I think we're kind of exactly where we thought we'd be at the beginning of the season with respect to Brady and Rodgers here.
What about Antonio Brown? Like, how big a loss is he going to be?
So he has been Brady's number one target over the last, like, five, six games of the season. He caught a touchdown pass in the round one playoff win at Washington two weekends ago. And then he got hurt last week against the Saints. He was probably he's the best, most experienced receiver that they have. Mike Evans is obviously very good, too, but he's been, you know, in and out with some injuries himself the last couple of weeks. And Gronk is great, but Gronk isn't, you know, the Gronk of 5 or 6 years ago. So I do think this is going to hurt. He's going to be replaced by some less experienced receivers. I think the big thing, guys, though, is, you know, you've got Brady, you've got Gronk, you've got Antonio Brown, and then there's not a lot of other real playoff experience on this roster. And so I think that's where some of that, the big loss could be felt.
Shep, just on that, Green Bay look really balanced, but Aaron Rodgers has been outstanding this season.
He really has. And look, last week against the Rams, it kind of felt like they really just they could just score at will. And look, they weren't scoring touchdowns every possession, but they scored points, I think, on their first five or six possessions. And they really just were kind of in control of that game from the opening kickoff. I think the thing that's going to be interesting to see is back in week 6, Green Bay went down to Tampa and played on a Sunday night. And the Bucs absolutely blew the doors off of them. I mean, they beat them by 28 points. And, I mean, it was a blowout from the beginning. And so, and this was like a week or so after the Bucs, I think, had just lost to the Saints in a pretty bad way, too. So it was kind of shocking to see at that time. You know, the Packers have Davante Adams, who's really pretty much an unstoppable wide receiver at this point right now. And Aaron Jones is doing a great job out of the backfield. And Rodgers really seems to be dialed in. He's the likely MVP of the season this year. And, you know, not knowing exactly what the weather is going to be like, I'll put it this way. It's going to be a whole lot colder in Green Bay, Wisconsin than it's going to be in Tampa Bay, Florida on Saturday or Sunday, excuse me. And so that's definitely going to be a factor as well.
Is it a big factor? Like, are they not prepared for it? Like, do they not do anything to make them ready for the conditions, or can they?
So that's the thing. I mean, you know, so Marie, sometimes like when you're playing out, like if you're playing in Denver, Colorado with the high elevation, you might travel out there like a week or a day or two early to try to get your body acclimated to, you know, being a mile high, you know, in the air. For the cold, I mean, and look, it's not like the Packer players are just like sitting outside swimming in the lake right now, you know, because they're just like polar bears or anything like that. I mean, you know, they're regular human beings too, and they hate being cold too, but it's just that you're used to it. I mean, if you're just, I mean, Florida has, you know, pretty similar, you know, climate the where I live, and we've had some cold weather, but I mean, I could probably be outside today with like no jacket on if I really wanted to. It's a little rainy here today, but I mean, it's not like it's freezing. It has been snowing in Green Bay for 2 months. Like, there are feet of snow on the ground up there. You know, like, it is a different environment completely. It's not like, oh, they're going to go from, you know, Florida to, like, Washington, D.C. or Nashville. I mean, they are going, you know, to the Arctic Circle. It is freezing up there.
Shep, before we move on to the AFC, can you call this one for us, Tampa or Green Bay?
I like Green Bay at home. I think it's a close game. I'd be stunned if somebody blows the doors off of somebody like they did the first time they played with Tampa winning that game. I think this is a whole lot closer. You know, I'm thinking somewhere along the lines of like 30-24, 30-27, and the Packers get the edge.
Okay.
So we also have Buffalo at Kansas City, and everybody is wondering about Patrick Mahomes. What can you tell us?
Yeah, so he is... It's weird, okay? So he got knocked out of the game last week against the Cleveland Browns, and the Chiefs were able to hold on and get the win. And so he is... The Chiefs have said he's basically ready to go and he's ready to play, but because the NFL has a concussion protocol that has like five steps that you kind of have to clear and make your way through, he is technically in the concussion protocol, so therefore he is not listed as a full participant, if that makes sense. So they fully anticipate him playing. He's going to travel. He, you know, the Bills are preparing to see Patrick Mahomes, as they should. But again, he's 4 or 5 days away from, you know, having to leave the game and was clearly groggy and not sure if it was an actual concussion or maybe he got, you know, hit on the head or was he choked out a little bit or whatever it was. But it was enough to knock him out of the game. It'll be the upset of the week if he's not, you know, back under center for the Chiefs on the first snap of offense this Sunday.
How much would they have to change game plan, Shep, to go out without him? You know, does it all automatically change to a running game, or what do they do?
Yeah, so, I mean, the thing that makes him so unique is his ability, like a Lamar Jackson, and really like Josh Allen for the Bills, the opposing quarterback this week. I mean, these guys can run it, and they can throw it. And that is, you know, the ability that Mahomes has. He's got this just fantastic mentality to kind of just almost feel and sense things and then get rid of the ball. And the backup quarterback, Chad Henne, you know, he's been in the league for a long time. I think he got his, you know, he led them to a win last week. I think it was his first kind of win in like 5 or 6 years. He's just been a kind of a perennial backup the last couple of years, which is always good money if you can make it, you know. But then you get thrown into a playoff game and you've got to perform, and give him credit, he did. I mean, he did enough to keep, you know, the Chiefs alive this year to kind of bridge the gap to get Mahomes back. But yes, you're not going to have as an explosive offense if you're the Kansas City Chiefs, if Patrick Mahomes is not your quarterback. I mean that's probably the, you know, the most obvious thing I'll say in this interview. But you have all those weapons. You've got Clyde Edwards-Helaire. You've got Travis Kelce and Sammy Watkins and Mecole Hardman. You've got all these guys that are still there. It's just the guy running the show is just not as talented as the guy who is supposed to be running the show because he's out injured. And so without a doubt, you'd have to change some things up.
So, Shep, who is going to make it to the Super Bowl and play in front of 22,000 fans, which is a part of a prize almost, to actually be able to do that, yeah.
Yeah, to get around and see other human beings, yeah, right. The game's in Florida, so who knows, they may open that up to 50,000 between now and then. I think, you know, look, it's hard to go on the road and win these championship games. I mean, obviously you're not going to have the normal, you know, kind of crazy crowd that you'll have in Kansas City. I mean, this matchup is just two of the best fan bases in the National Football League. I think if Mahomes is there and he's playing like he's supposed to play, I think the Chiefs are a better football team than the Bills. I think these are probably the two best teams in the NFL, and it's, you know, kind of sad that they're not going to meet in the Super Bowl. I think the Chiefs win it if Mahomes is there and he's playing. If he's not, I would likely give the edge to the Bills. I think it's going to be another close game, too. I mean, they played earlier in the season as well. The Chiefs won that game by 9 points. They ran the ball for like 250 yards. I don't think we're going to see the same thing this week. I think we're going to see a closer game. I think the Chiefs win if Mahomes is there and ready to play.
I know it's all football at the moment, Shep, but looking at the NBA, LeBron James scored a season high of 34 to keep the LA Lakers maintaining their 100% record on the road. But they're looking at reducing the players' amount of contact, and they've told them to stop hugging.
Yeah, this was interesting. They they must be, the NBA is, you know, as you say, it's odd because, you know, the guys are out there, they're sweating all over each other, they're running all over the place. But then after the games, they want to try to limit the contact that the players have, you know, if they're going over and talking to players on the opposing team or high-fiving or they're hugging. And so it seems like they've taken a page out of my father's playbook from when I was a child, and they've outlawed hugging. So, you know, they're just going to try to put a security guard out near half court for, you know, post-game, you know, interactions, and really just try to get the guys off of the court, get them back to their locker rooms, and just go from there. But it's odd. You know, they did so well with the bubble last year, and they, you know, I don't believe there's just been some, you know, spontaneous breakout all over the NBA with the virus. Now, I will say this. They have shut down the Memphis Grizzlies facility for the next three games, and they've postponed their next three games. So there must be some kind of outbreak there, you know, at that facility, similar to what we've seen in the NFL, I think, with the Titans and with the Ravens. And so, you know, the NBA is trying to avoid, you know, similar situations like that. And one of the reasons or one of the ways they've come up to try to limit contact is to reduce, you know, hugging and high fives and handshakes and whatever else after games between teams, between the players on opposing teams. So we'll see if it has any impact.
Shep, thanks a million. We didn't even get to chat about the greatest performance of the whole week, Lady Gaga, but hopefully we'll pick it up some other time. Enjoy the weekend and we'll chat to you soon.
All right. Talk to you later, guys. Thanks.
With Green Firm, snack smart. With Green Firm's new high protein snacking range, available in selected Tesco, Super Value, and convenience stores nationwide.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back. Just a little bit of news in case anybody is interested in the Olympic Games saga that seems to be ongoing at the moment. Will they go ahead? Won't they go ahead? Well, the Olympic Federation of Ireland has this evening released a statement. They have joined with the IOC and the Tokyo Organising Committee in rejecting last night's report that the Japanese government had privately concluded that the rescheduled Olympics and Paralympic Games should be cancelled. A lot of athletes reacted quite negatively to that information because it's such a tough time for them trying to figure out what is happening. But in the statement that the OFI released, they emphasised their aim to release accurate and up-to-date news to the athletes when it becomes available. So it's one of those where I think it is watch this space for the next few weeks, and we try and figure out what will happen, but hopefully they will go ahead.
Well, we know what's happening this weekend. There's going to be brilliant racing, and we're delighted to be joined by Jane Mangan. Jane, how are you?
I'm very good, thank you, guys.
Jim, we'll get to all the action of the weekend, but it was we're kind of used to the news of GA players retiring at the moment, but it was a bit of a bolter to hear about David Mullins.
Yes, David, of course, only 24, and I think the second youngest rider ever to win the Aintree Grand National. A number of grade ones, including on horses like Faheen, Album, Photo, and Nichols Canyon. But reading David's reasoning for it, he said he's been looking for the last 18 months for a way out. He obviously just wasn't enjoying it like he should be. His heart wasn't 100% in it, and I think it's a huge call. I admire him for making it at such a young age, at 24. He didn't want to be 10 years down the line thinking he should have gone a different way, because if it's not for you, then you, unfortunately, it's not fair to the trainers you're riding for or the owners. That you have to give 110%. We know as a jockey, like it is with any sport, you have to be 110% committed. You have to live, breathe and consume the game. And I admire him for making the call, because it wouldn't have been easy, especially with that surname. That comes with quite a reputation.
That's for sure. It does seem like quite a brave call, all right, for those reasons that you have outlined. Well, the thing is, the show does go on, Jane, and it will go on over the weekend, and some good racing across the water tomorrow.
Absolutely, yeah. We're going to head to Ascot first for the Clarence House. That's the highlight of the weekend for me. There's a big field, but I think the quality is here in the Clarence House Chase. Won last year by Defi Desoy. He lines up to try and regain his crown. Of course, last year he beat Undesoe, but this year there won't be an Undesoe. There'll be a certain Politologue in his way, the reigning champion Chase Hero. He was awesome in the Tingle Creek last time. But there's also another horse in there called Waiting Patiently. Waiting Patiently is interesting because obviously last time we saw him, he was second to Frodon in the King George, which is a Gold Cup trip over 3 mile distance. He's dropping dramatically down to 2 miles in the minimum trip to take on champion chase type horses. So that's a very interesting tactic by Ruth Jefferson for waiting patiently. But if Defi Desoye is going to regain his crown, he has to re-find his form. He was very, very disappointing when we last saw him in the Schlore chase behind Put the Kettle On at Cheltenham. But Politolog is the 10-year-old. He's the highest rated horses in here, and he's the horse they all have to beat, because the form of Paul Nicholls this year has been dominant.
Last week we were chatting about Willie Mullins. This week it's Jessica Harrington, and she cited the extra cost in travelling for Magic of the Light to Ascot, Jane.
Yeah, I suppose she wasn't really talking about VAT. She was more talking about the logistics of it, and perhaps the veterinary costs that are added on to the logistics of travelling Magic of Light, because she'd be well used to travelling this mare. Of course, she's after winning this mare's hurdle, this Grade 2 mare's hurdle at Ascot for the last 2 years. So she is seeking a hat-trick of wins, but she's going to face a formidable opponent in Roxana. Roxana is rated £6 superior to her, and when we last saw her, she's a former Cheltenham Festival winning mare herself, when we last saw her, she was third behind Paisley Park and Thyme Hill in the long walk hurdle. That sets the standard. I love Magic of Light. I think she's a very consistent mare, but Roxana is the one she's going to have to beat.
Okay, Jane, there is a lot more to get through, but unfortunately, that's all we have time for. But we'll chat to you again next week, because it is time for the Punters Council. And as always, Leon Blanche from Boyle Sports joins us now on the line. Today's charity is a loan, and Dunica O'Callaghan is our punter.
Woohoo!
So, Leon, I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing great, yeah. Got over Christmas well. Great sport. Thank God sport is still on. It keeps everyone sane during these tough times, no doubt about that.
And that's the point we were making. We were chatting about who we'd represent today, and we thought it was important to represent alone, a national organisation that support and empower so many of our elderly people at home and make a home a little bit safer. So, Leon, I think we've got Alan Cawley's treble, isn't it, Marie?
Yep. Sheffield United, Man United and Everton. What can you give us?
Yeah, look, I think Sheffield United and Everton should easily win, even though it is the FA Cup. Man United against Liverpool, I suppose Liverpool's form, you'd have to go with United. 7-2 for Alan's treble. I'm going to increase that to 5-1.
Okay, and then Jane Mangan has gone for a Lord Royal at Wilkinson Town, in the Wilkinson Town Beginners Chase in Navan tomorrow.
Yeah, Willie Mullins and Paul Townend teaming up with this favourite. It's a 4-5 chance, Marie. I'm going to push it out to 2-1 for Jane's charity tip. And the Boyle Sports boost, I just heard the back end of Jane talking about the Grade 1 at Ascot tomorrow. I'm going to go with Politolog. I just think the form of Paul Nicholls, it's a 5-4 chance. Once again, I'm going to push the Boyle Sports boost out to 2-1 as well.
Leon, I love you to bits, but I learned last week to always back Jane Mangan, so I'm going to go with Jane Mangan if you don't mind.
Listen, Dunica, you're 100% right, buddy.